But coming back from this trip and catching up with the Jewish publications that I receive, I'm just smitten between the eyes at the velocity of this remarkable change and this extensiveness, which sets the whole stage for the persecution that we know will come. So I just want to quote from the best of these articles here and there, just to sound the highlights, to alert those that are joined with us in these concerns, in a remarkable article from the New York Magazine written by a Jewish writer, Craig Horowitz, who quotes different Jewish authorities. One is Foxman, who's the head of the Anti-Defamation League, very much concerned with the new film on the Passion by Gibson as being anti-Semitic and will stir up feelings against the Jewish community, which it likely may. And that the same man warns that the threat to the safety and security of the Jewish people is as great, if not greater, than what we faced in the 30s. Of course, what we faced in the 30s was the rise of Nazism. So if this exceeds that, what a portent that is. Part of the reason for this is that there's a new problem and an enemy that hasn't been seen before. It's the result of the burgeoning anti-Israel, anti-Zionist emotion, which is obtaining a kind of political correctness throughout the world. Instead of representing an off-the-wall gutter slum mentality, it's a respected political position to be anti-Israel and to see Israel as being analogous to Nazi Germany and Sharon, the prime minister, as being the equivalent of Hitler. These kinds of parallels, I mean, are an astonishment. Maybe some uneducated jerk could make a statement like that, but people at the highest levels are saying and supporting these things, and this is what is so frightening. It's politically correct. It's accepted. A British professor refused to have an Israeli student working in his laboratory because he had been at one time in the Israeli armed forces. And he received a mild reprimand from his academic institution, but not a dismissal. Things like that. Denmark, countries that have been supportive of Israel, are now refusing her products. Oranges, the kinds of things that have wide circulation in European markets, are affecting the Israeli economy. So there's a remarkable, massive reaction against Israel as being the oppressor and the persecutor. And as I said in my newsletter article, out of the perplexity of preserving themselves in the face of terrorist bombings, they themselves are using a measure of force and violence which is construed by the world as being racist, genocidal, all the kinds of things that would be the last thing to be associated with Jews who only 50 years ago were the victims of those things and now being looked upon as the great perpetrators. So there's a shift. Talk about paradigm shift. There's a remarkable and radical shift in the world in its attitude, not only toward Israel, but toward the Jew. That's the frightening thing, this equation. So that Jews in France, Jews in England, Jews in Germany are in danger. And the rabbi, the chief rabbi of France, had to make a public statement to the Jewish community, to the men, don't wear your head coverings in the street. Don't be identified as a Jew. If you have to have your head covered, wear a cap that would not identify you as a Jew. That a Jew should be afraid of being recognized in such places as France, England, and Germany is already a token of the remarkable thing that is taking place with such velocity, as I've said. He was from Bulgaria. He was from Israel, came to Bulgaria to head up the Lubavitch outreach, and had never known anti-Semitism until he walked the streets of Sofia, Bulgaria. And kids from the school, seeing him with his black beard and yarmulke, came running over and started calling him Jew and names. It was altogether a new dimension of experience, which is why I think he allowed us to pray for him, knowing that we were believers, which is also kind of an interesting and maybe a significant factor. So what only two or three years ago would have been considered hateful, naked bigotry is now a legitimate political position. The irony here is that Israel, which was supposed to be the solution to centuries of anti-Semitism, is providing a flashpoint and a provocation for anti-Semitism. The most critical question of the day is, why has the world turned against us, and what is to be done about it? And in another article by a precious, aged Jewish commentator, in another publication I receive, where he gives his own statement of Islamic terrorism as being insoluble, cannot be corrected. Islam cannot be educated. It's intrinsic to their whole nature of their religion and their culture. They prefer dictators and single-minded in their desire for the destruction of Jews. He said, let us remember that the Palestinians dance in joy after every terrorist attack, including the destruction of the New York financial towers. When they came down, there was celebration in the West Bank on the part of Arabs and throughout the whole Islamic world as a great victory. His article ends on this nostalgic note. Israel is no doubt a bastion of democracy when the Palestinian leadership is a stronghold of terrorism. Let the world take the necessary steps to eradicate terrorism. If, God forbid, they do not do so, who knows what dangers the world will face? He might well have said, if they do not do so, who knows what dangers Jews in the world will face? Well, I can tell him with all assurance, the world will not find an answer, and that this will work itself out with a terrible devastation to Jews worldwide. There's nothing that can be done against it. And in fact, maybe in this article or elsewhere, the demographics of Arab increase in their birth rate and the declining birth rate among Israelis and Jews means that within the next 10 years, not only will Israel be overrun and be made a minority within its own borders, but in the United States, where Jewish presence and influence has been a political factor toward and for Israel and the Jew, the increasing Islamic presence in America will outdistance them and become a political factor that politicians will recognize and cater to, which is already happening in France. 500,000 Jews, one of the largest Jewish communities of Europe, but 5 million Arabs. And so the political authorities are very condescending toward the Arab presence because it has a political weight, and therefore they cannot be to the Jewish community what they perhaps otherwise would without provoking their Arab constituency in a way that they are afraid to do. So even demographics, the increase of population, everything is coming to such a climax that the Lord, of course, foreknew, but we need to understand that disaster is at the door. And as much as we have spoken that to the church, I'm feeling that in my own soul, I'm not braced and I'm not prepared for the enormity and the devastation that is going to come and come soon. So Jews are themselves asking, what's happened? Boy, this is an overnight phenomenon. 50 years ago, people were disposed toward us. We were the objects of sympathy. We had come through a terrible Holocaust. And within a half century, as Elie Wiesel, as I quoted yesterday in my newsletter article, says, it's a madness. And I can't believe that 50 years after the Holocaust, this should be happening. A new madness has come into the world. One Jewish commentator writes, it's difficult. It's a difficult time to be Jewish. Many people in the Jewish community don't know what to think. They feel powerless. They see their hopes and dreams, indeed the world in flames, and they don't have any idea what to do about it. Well, I think that this is necessary, that the crisis come of such proportion that Jews, for the first time, cannot not only solve it, but they cannot even understand it. It's a phenomenon that eclipses all categories. Indeed, public opinion has swung so far to the Palestinian side that for the first time in decades, the very legitimacy of a Jewish state has been widely called into question. Columnists in mainstream European newspapers, like The Guardian in England, Le Monde in France, regularly challenge the validity of Israel and of Zionism. In a poll that was taken in Europe, 60-some-odd percent of the respondents claimed that Israel was the nation that most threatens the world. And in Holland, 77%, which was one of the great allies of Israel, only until this intifada and the shift by which now Israel now is looked upon as the persecutor. And now, so the question is even being raised, and Israelis, some left-wing Israelis, are even considering that maybe the concept of Israel as a state is wrong. Look what it's provoking, and why should there be that entity? Maybe we ought to have a single nation, a binational Israel, together with Palestinians, only that within 5 to 10 years, the birth rate is such that Israel, the Jews, will be a minority within their own ex-Jewish state. But that people would talk about eliminating Israel as an entity is one step removed from eliminating Jews as an entity. So these are ominous considerations that have taken place overnight. The language of the debate has become so polarized, so grotesquely distorted. Words like genocide, apartheid, and fascism are used regularly that legitimate criticism of Israel is near impossible to hear. Israel is equated as being Nazi and racist and genocidal. Abraham Berg, former speaker of Israel's Knesset and currently a Labour Party Knesset member, Knesset is Israel's parliament, lamented, quote, "We were supposed to be a light unto the nations, in this we have failed," unquote. And that's surely true enough. Of course, from our perspective, if you have refused the light that has come into the world, how shall you be a light to the nations? And it's taken 2,000 years for that logic to work its way out and express itself, that Jews of this distinction have to acknowledge we have failed. That we are accused now of the very things of which we ourselves have formerly been victim. He says, Israel, having ceased to care about the children of the Palestinians, should not be surprised when they come washed in hatred and blow themselves up in the centers of Israel's escapism. A remarkable observation that because we as a nation have not cared for Palestinian children, they're coming into the places of our escapism, discotheques, restaurants, places of amusement, and there they blow themselves up. There's a kind of an ironic action here that this Berg, B-U-R-G, is acknowledging. They consign themselves to Allah in our places of recreation because their own lives are torture. They spill their own blood in our restaurants in order to ruin our appetites because they have children and parents at home who are hungry. So not only has the nation failed to be a light unto the world, it has failed even to be compassionate and acknowledging of the suffering that has taken place with their Palestinian neighbors. Ariel Sharon is looked upon as the modern incarnation of Hitler, the Israeli army as the Wehrmacht, or worse, the SS, the secret service, and Ramallah and Jenin are Auschwitz and Buchenwald. The Israelis are racist, imperialist, colonialist, and the suicide bombers, the murderers who pack bombs with nails and razor blades to cause the maximum civilian carnage, are freedom fighters, objects of sympathy, and in some quarters even of admiration. As long as the innocent people they are killing are Jews. Two-thirds of Israelis are believed to support a two-state solution, which is the object of hate, scorn, and revulsion among the left everywhere in the world. This is the state of Israel, the object of hate, scorn, and revulsion among the left everywhere in the world. It's dangerous to be a Jewish student on an American campus today. There have been riots at San Francisco State when the Jewish students set up a little table for Israel, and the Palestinian students just overwhelmed them. The police came and could not control the mob. And so there's a phenomenon taking place on campuses where to identify yourself as a Jew, be identified, or to be in sympathy with Israel, is to make yourself a candidate for very serious harm. European synagogues are bombed, Jewish schools are torched, physical attacks on individuals readily identifiable as Jews have become shockingly routine. In a recent European Union poll, 60% of the respondents chose Israel as the country that poses the greatest threat to world peace. In the Netherlands, of all places where Jewish citizens were steadfastly protected during World War II, 74% of the Dutch fingered Israel. That's the land of Anne Frank. The great sympathy has turned on its head. And now two-thirds more of the nation look upon Israel as the number one factor of danger to all the world. And remember the German slogan, the Jews are our misfortune, will become now a global slogan. And what do you do with them, with the people who are your misfortune? You eradicate them. You complete what Hitler had begun. In Italy, a front page cartoon depicting an Israeli tank with its huge gun pointed right at the baby Jesus. The caption read, quote, "Surely they don't want to kill me again?" Question mark. If the image of their Jewish citizens is inextricably linked to Israel, you either change the image or break the link, and there's no easy answer for doing either. They're without an answer. The Jewish community doesn't have an answer. How do you affect public opinion and show that you guys have us all wrong? We're not persecutors. We're not Nazi. We're not racist. We're just trying to put up a wall to protect us from these terror bombers coming in. Well, that wall is looked upon as apartheid. That's what the South Africans were doing with their black people. You're now doing with Palestinians. So they're in the Israeli and the Jews in the most uncanny, unsupportable position where no amount of public relations expertise can alter the whole shift that has taken place in the mentality of the world against Israel and equated with Israel, the Jew himself. Most Western European countries have growing restive Muslim populations that are having trouble assimilating, yet they are gaining political power. France has more than 6 million Muslims, and it's no accident that the president of France began to crack down on anti-Semitism only after the national elections. So they're very concerned. The political factor is important. Why should we be in danger of World War III because of these people? Is a question that's being raised. But in the earlier time, in 1994, when the Jewish community building was bombed in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and a year or two before or after, it was the Israeli embassy, the Argentinians who lived in those residential areas complained that their lives were being endangered by being in proximity to Jewish institutions. So what is our safety? Get rid of them. And so the question is now being raised, why should we suffer of the prospect of World War III for this nation, Israel? And how long will it take before, and it has already been said, would we have suffered the loss of the bombings of the financial towers or the Pentagon if we had not this identification with Israel? And so soon what is like an underground conversation will become public and find more and more adherents. So the problem in Europe seems destined to only get worse over the next several years. Europe has both an aging population and a low birth rate, so that they need immigration, and Muslims are the primary group coming in. In the Muslim world, where anti-Israel and anti-Jewish extremism are hardly news, the speech by an outgoing Malaysian prime minister broke new ground. Not since Hitler has a head of state had the gall to take off the rhetorical gloves with such zeal, addressing the 57 member nations of the Organization of the Islamic Conference. He called on the world's 1.3 billion Muslims to defeat the Jews. That message was met with a standing ovation, in which he said that Israelis and Jews control most of the economy and media in the world, and they have others to fight their battles. In allegations like that. Recently, in the German government, a member of that government made the remark that Jews are the precipitators of violence. They were the Bolshevists in the Russian Revolution, and they're always in the forefront of all those movements that are against peace. And so why are they complaining now that they're being victim when they themselves have stirred things? And there's a certain amount of historical truth to that, but to proclaim that openly was considered a shock and an anti-Semitic statement, and the man is losing his position in his political party and is going to court, and he will not recant. This is because I've been speaking the truth. The European looks upon Israel as an occupying colonialist state engaging in war crimes, and that Israel no longer has the high moral ground. Bashing the Israelis enabled the various governments to try to curry favor with their alienated Muslim populations. The whole thing just keeps spiraling, this Jewish authority says. And very quickly, Israeli violence was unjustified, and therefore they were actually responsible for the Palestinian violence unleashed on them. This is in keeping with the thought that had been circulated that the towers that came down were a Jewish plot, that this was not Islamic, but designed by Zionists somehow to promote their own cause and be an object of sympathy. That people can... It's like the big lie during the Nazi time, but the remarkable thing is finding acceptance. Anti-Semitism is being spread through those who teach Islam, and it's metastasizing like cancer. It took Christianity 2,000 years to clean up its act, and now it's being taught again through a religious system. I'm frightened for my grandchildren, and Israeli woman writes. Most American Jewish leaders believe they are up against huge forces around the world, and that they cannot fight that fight alone. We have to make people understand that anti-Semitism is not a uniquely Jewish problem. It's a cancer which, left unchecked, infects and ultimately kills democratic societies. That's the message we have to get out. And to that message I would say, fat chance, that you can persuade the world that your problem is their problem and that it's an attack against democratic society, when it's uniquely, of course, an attack against a Jew, and you're not going to affect world opinion. World opinion is like a blot spreading furiously against you. You'll not roll it back. So it behooves the church that doesn't get the Jewish press to realize what in fact is taking place presently and to understand the remarkable velocity by which it is sweeping the world and will affect everything everywhere. And that we're closer now to the thing that we have anticipated at the time of Jacob's trouble than we know. And as much as we have been trying to stir the church to an awareness ourselves and thought that we had a handle, I don't know that I personally have the moral stamina to bear what is going to come. When we shall see terrorist bombers in the United States, in San Francisco, and the institutions that cannot be protected, like the two synagogues in Turkey, in Istanbul. I should have brought it with me. There was an article in the Jewish press of a man who survived that bombing, and he watched the wall come down. He said, ordinarily, had I been in my front seat in that synagogue, I'd be dead. But because of the crowd of a special dedication of the newly renovated synagogue, I was sitting in the back. And then we heard a loud noise, and then terrible explosion, and the walls just began to come down on us. I had a hole at the wall that people could get by in panic. And the chazan, the one who cares for the building, was trapped. His leg was shattered, crying out for help. This guy was in a quandary. Do I leave before the gas main was broken and was hissing gas, and all it needed was a spark for the whole thing to go up in flames. And so he's in a no man land. Do I help this man or do I get out? Well, the getting is good. He helped him. And the gas thing never exploded, but it might have. It was a terrifying report from what happens when those bombs go off in a newly decorated, newly dedicated synagogue that cannot be protected. And Jews are indefensible worldwide. So the Jewish Community Center that I was attending in New York for that class on Judaism and using its gym and pool has remarkable concrete barriers on the sidewalk so that no truck can come off the street and crash into that building and bring it down. And when we went to Kenya, in Nairobi, the capital, in that downtown area where the British Embassy and other institutions are, you cannot even park. The parking places have been now taken over by stanchions of a concrete or iron kind to keep vehicles from proximity. But despite all of that, essentially, Jews are indefensible, and there will be terrible calamity and flight. And we need to remember that in the few places where I quoted Jewish sources, they say we've never considered a problem of this magnitude, and we really have no answer for it. So I think it was important to take our Sunday morning time to record this and get this out to sectors of the church, don't know the gravity of the situation and the remarkable growing intensity of it, that we need to gird our loins and to be prepared for what is assuredly coming and is already at the door. We're sharing from the report by a Jewish correspondent on the new anti-Semitism, that we will see the first waves of Jews in flight, either from actual terror attacks or the very prospect of them, when they recognize that they're in places of great vulnerability and they will have to get out in places that are not densely populated. Let this very brief report set in motion a deepened apprehension for what this hour is and what is taking place. Wake us from our sleep to consider those things that are unthinkable, that Avi Wiesel, the survivor of Auschwitz, has to say, in only 50 years, this thing is happening again, in yet greater measure than what took place in Europe. This is the new madness, and there is no solution for it. So, my God, let this be life-saving in some way, and set in motion preparation by the church being alerted. For to whom will these Jews come, and where will they find safety and refuge if we are not the ones to provide it? So let there be, my God, a first expression of that necessary provision for the woman in the wilderness, even by the events now forming, and by this report, we thank you and give you praise in Jesus' name. Amen.